Hey there, this is Seth Wires from Channel 9 coming to you from the Carnegie Observatory where we're getting ready for a meetup about space apps. But we have two guests here that are going to be working on some of the space apps. Why don't you tell us who you are and then how you got involved in space apps?
Hi, I'm Kyle Spitznagel. Got involved actually through a friend of ours, Chelsea Graff, who kind of introduced us to the whole space apps thing. And I'm here with my friend Chris Del Guercio.
Right, I'm Chris Del Guercio, and our friend, her father is deeply involved at JPL, and she told us about this, and we're all high school friends, and we all jumped at the chance to work together, so.
That's awesome, but you're way past high school. What did you guys study in college?
Right, I was computer engineering at USC, so, and I'm a programmer now, do mostly web programming, so.
And what about you?
I majored in architecture, so I've got kind of a 3D modeling background. It's mostly what I do in my for work now. I do 3D modeling.
That's awesome. So tell us about the space app that you're going to be working on.
Right. So our challenge that we chose is called AirCheck, and the summary is that we're supposed to write an app or some sort of platform where we bring together data from NASA about air quality with possibly like user-generated data, like maybe, you know, from an app or from Twitter, you know, stuff like that. So
that's interesting. And so that's an interesting problem, right? Because you're getting data first from somewhere, but you're also generating data. How are you going to go about doing that?
It's a tough problem, right? Because you get data from all kinds of different sources. And so you've got to understand both what data you want to try to bring into your app and then how to process it. And then ideally it's somewhat live, right? You want to be able to take the live data that NASA's generating and also kind of take some curated data from the outside world and bring that in. And then actually we were talking about an idea of then sending that information back out, right? So maybe there's a way that an end user for the app gets something specific to them about their local conditions that tells them, you know, something to look for, something meaningful in the data.
So let's see if I understand this application correctly. You're telling me that this particular challenge is revolving around the air quality.
Right.
And is it air quality in a specific location, in a lot of locations, in all locations? How do you sort of, because as a programmer, as engineers, we start to try to narrow things down. What is this app like in your mind?
I think there's a few different ways we can do it. I think to start, what we're going to do is we're going to look at what data is available. And a lot of NASA's data is global, a lot of it's satellite data, for instance. And so we start there. But it could be that we have different data sources that are more specific. And, you know, if we find maybe three or four different data sources that are all, you know, just Southern California, maybe we can write a really, really, really good system for just Southern California, as opposed to, you know, just using one or two data sources for the world.
So that's the path of, like, we already have data. Let's pivot a little bit and talk about the path where you're collecting data. How do you envision collecting this data, and then maybe sort of curating it so that it actually is consumable by other people?
So one way to do that is by using natural language processing, right? Using, you know, an online social media service or, you know, something like Twitter to start aggregating information from users. So, for example, one way that we could send out information to users is by, you know, creating a bot, maybe on Twitter, that makes an announcement about a certain locale. And then if people can then respond back to that bot, you can start to curate that information that they're sending back to you to understand what their conditions are. You could also do a front end, you know, something in the app itself that people can go in and enter data, but we think that it might be challenging and not very interesting for people to come in and enter all these individual data points onto some, you know, discrete app. It'd probably be better to meet them where they're already operating on social media.
And that's interesting, but how do you get like a, because for air quality there's like a severe, moderate, and very bad, red, and all the way. How do you get a person to respond like severe air quality? How do they even know that's something, you see what I'm saying? Like, how are you going to measure this stuff?
I think the key is trying to get as many data points as possible.
Okay.
And then hopefully, like, maybe we can do some type of sentiment analysis where we're seeing, you know, people using certain words that are indicating that they're not breathing well. And then kind of over the aggregate, it just kind of hopefully it'll kind of average out. We can see, oh, it's worse today than it was yesterday, or maybe in this particular region it's really bad. So.
And I think the key with that is that we've got to train the program, right?
Absolutely.
We've got to use machine learning to take a lot of static data, because it looks like there's a lot of static data out there that we can use as training platforms. Mm. Take that data, train it against some NASA data to deliver us a baseline for what we're expecting, and then start applying live feed data and try to start identifying correlations.
So how do you also involve sort of sensor stuff? Are you considering using sensors to get air quality data as well?
The great thing about a sensor is it's unequivocal, right? Mm. Ideally, unless it fails, it doesn't change, it's not biased, it just tells you what the sensor reading is. Mm. And so, yeah, if we can deploy sensors, and in fact, another friend of ours, Eric, is looking into sensors right now.
Right, he's an Android expert, so possibly we could do something like Square does, where you have a little sensor, stick it on the top of your phone, and maybe it takes readings, a couple minutes and sends it to our server, and now we have another data source that is incredibly real time.
That's awesome. So from an engineering perspective, how do you foresee, like, you're going to hit the ground, I think it's on a Saturday, what's the first thing you're going to be doing, or what are some things that you're doing in anticipation of getting out? What's the engineering process going to look like for you?
So what I'm doing starting this week is we've already collated a few different data sources, and I'm looking, what's the quality of this data, like what's the format, what types of information are in each of these sources, and because it matters, like maybe, data source one might have data to this resolution, it might be missing a field, like maybe it doesn't have the altitude or something, and how do you mesh that with data source two that maybe has different fields and maybe includes more data? Do you have to take like the common denominator? Mm. Or can you integrate them in some intelligent way that can help the final system be as accurate as possible?
So what do these data look like? Is it literally just like spreadsheets or like databases?
A lot of it varies. NASA's providing image data through their online repository. And actually, they've got a satellite network that updates it basically globally approximately every 3 hours. You get new satellite feeds. And so from that, you can process that information into, where is there a wildfire? What are the cloud conditions in this area? And that's really rich. It's both very granular data, but also global data. That's
right.
Really powerful. But then there's this whole other subset of data that is isolated to maybe it's a year. It's data from 2014. It's isolated to a certain region. Maybe it's very rich for that particular region, but it's not global in scale. And so that's a lot of what we're having to do before that event. We want to try to figure out, okay, what data are we going to use? How can we use it? And then once we kind of have our data sources picked out, we think we'll be prepared for the day of.
Can you give us a sense of sort of the scale of the data? Are we talking like gigabytes, terabytes?
So I've looked at some of the NASA stuff I was actually looking at a couple days ago, and it's a few of the instruments are, like gigabytes a day. So that's the real-time data,
wow.
and that's from one instrument. So one instrument on a satellite, or maybe one satellite. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, it's definitely lots and lots of data.
That's amazing. So, yeah. How are you going to process this scale of data? I mean, you start to run into RAM issues. You start to run into hard drive issues.
It's all got to go on the cloud.
Yeah.
You can't do it off of a laptop. You can't even download the data quickly enough to process it. And so it'll all have to be run through a cloud service, and something like Microsoft's Azure or Power BI. There's really no other way to process it.
So do you have any experience with Power BI? Is there something that you've learned about Power BI, or is there something in Azure that you're thinking about looking at first?
Actually, at work we've started. Working with Power BI as a means to start understanding the construction process better.
Mm-hmm.
So we're applying it to buildings to analyze more efficient processes to put them together. And it's pretty interesting. We're still really in the early phases, but being able to take some data, quickly assemble graphs, and not having to worry at all about how much data you're throwing at the service is really powerful, because you can throw thousands or millions of lines at it and it operates just fine.
Magic
processes.
It
processes it on the back end.
Right, and Kyle just told me that now you can embed Power BI in like a a browser.
Absolutely.
So like that kind of makes it, now it can be like a front end tool rather than just a back end tool, which would be really great for the hackathon.
Well, that's awesome.
Right.
Yeah, I believe we just barely talked about this just a couple of weeks ago about embedding Power BI into a website. So how do you, if someone's like interested in doing this kind of work, what suggestion do you have for them based upon the stuff you've already done? Like if you had someone that wanted to be on your team, what would you have them do first?
Oh, you mean like learn? I think I would ask them, what skills do you have? And like integrate. Like like we're a very varied team. Like we have lots of different skills. We have a mechanical engineer. We have a guy who's a writer mainly. We'll find uses for anybody, you know.
And that's interesting. Tell me a little bit about sort of the cross-discipline. How does people, like for example, an architect and a writer, how do they help sort of contribute to this kind of project? Are you finding like they're bringing stuff that you maybe would have never thought of?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like the product, like this product, like it there's this technical component that we've been talking about, you know, where you're manipulating data and you're throwing machine learning at it or whatever, but it's also how do you communicate that and how do you like productize it and make it actually used by people, which I think if we can get that across in our final product, that will give us a better chance at placing in the hackathon.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. It sounds like a really interesting project. Mm-hmm. Are you calling it anything? Is there like a website we need to go to eventually?
I don't think we have a name yet.
Stay tuned for that, obviously. Thanks so much for being with us. Thanks so much for watching. And we're in the Carnegie Observatory. My name is Seth Juarez. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.